Hello, this is Michael Fiore, and I want to welcome you to this bonus interview for the Secret Survey program. Now, as you're getting this interview, you should have already gone through all of the main Secret Survey modules, 8 modules as there were, plus the final lesson, the introduction, and the actual survey results. And I'm always nervous when we actually give away the actual survey results, because I believe my friend Josh, who's on the phone here, has seen them. They're kind of brutal, and they're kind of ridiculously honest and dirty. It involves swearing and requests for dirty things. One of the things I wanted to do in this interview is, and I'm going to introduce my guest in a second, he's a fantastic guy, is give a guy's perspective on the Secret Survey program. You know, if you, as a woman, you've gone through all of this stuff over the last 10, 15 days, whatever, whenever you're actually listening to this. And some of it can be kind of shocking. Some of it can seem obvious. Some of it can seem offensive. Some of it can seem misogynistic to a certain degree. Occasionally we get women that say, oh, Michael, you're being misogynistic about this, which if I think people that know me know I don't really have a misogynistic bone in my body. But that's okay. But I wanted to invite my friend Joshua Pellissier. Did I say Pellissier right, Josh? Is it always that
way? You always do.
I always do. I always say it right and think I'm saying it wrong, which is the problem. Joshua Pellissier onto the line with me to give a couple of things that we're going to talk about in this call, and we'll probably go, I'd say, 45 minutes to an hour on the entire thing. We're going to talk about a guy's perspective on the Secret Survey program, because Josh was actually one of the guys who I ran this stuff by when I was creating the program. He was, in a way, a beta test. I believe he told me that his girlfriend was reading it, and he was scared of that to a certain degree.
I actually wouldn't let her.
Oh, you wouldn't let her?
If I'd let her, and I was like, I don't think that's a good idea.
No, I don't think it's a good idea. She's gonna know too much. She's going to want too much. She's going to know all your secrets. So we're going to do that. We're going to talk about a guy's perspective on the Secret Survey program, where we went right, and what other guys think about this material. We're going to talk about the experience of being male, which is a concept I touched on in the Secret Survey program, but it's something I really want to expand on in this conversation with Josh, because I think one of the biggest things that helps women have better relationships with men is understanding what it's like to be a guy. Just like, by the way, one of the best things that helps men have better relationships with women is understanding what it's like to be a woman, because we're very, very different as we keep discovering more and more. And then also, as kind of a bonus to the bonus, as it were, Josh is a sneaky bastard who knows a lot about lie detecting and how to tell if somebody is lying to you. So later in this call, Josh is going to give you some tips on how to pick up if a man is lying to you. Now, in the why he lies section of this program, we talk about the more innocent reasons that men often lie. We talk about how men lie because they are afraid of women's emotions and how you react. We say that men lie because they don't think you want the truth, because women, in a lot of ways, program men not to tell them the truth by asking questions like, do I look fat in this, and things of that ilk. And we talk about the myth of Prince Charming, and how oftentimes men feel like they can't live up to the expectation the women have for men. But of course, there's also more nefarious reasons men would lie. And so we're going to give you some ability to have superpowers to know when men are lying to you. So Josh, before we get started, why don't you just give a brief background on who you are and why you are such a badass, and why women should want to listen to you, and what you do for a living that might make them think, oh my God, who is this guy?
Okay, so probably the most interesting thing that will get, I think that will really get people's ears perked listening to this, especially women are listening to this call now and listening to this interview, is that I have sort of cracked the code of attraction for men, for you know, what makes a woman attracted to a man. Now, this is really interesting, because I think a lot of women, when I tell this to them, they're like, they start guessing as to what it is, and it's so outside of anything you've ever heard of before that you would probably never guess in a million years. So I studied a lot of psychology, and I ended up building a system. I found out basically there's a system that every woman goes through whenever she becomes attracted to a man. And so I, learned that system for myself first, because I was like the nice guy before. You know, I think no one lies more than the nice guy, in my opinion.
Oh, God,
I mean,
no,
that's just
no.
Yes. How it is, you know. And so I had good intentions, but I was just, very, very weak and unattractive as a man, and I thought that it was kind of unfair that a lot of guys who ended up with women are guys who are just louder or, you know, more aggressive. That shouldn't really be, in my opinion, that shouldn't have been a good reason why a woman should choose a man. So I learned how to attract women, and then I did it so well that people started paying me money to teach them, and that's what I do for a living now. I teach guys how to attract women, and I know secrets that you probably want to know as a woman, you know, I mean, just in general, you want to know what guys are using on you. So I teach these guys, you know, just really eerily effective, like just scary effective techniques to attract women. And we can go into those a little bit later on if you want.
Yeah, why not? Michael, I think we can get a lot of content over this. And I think you and I talking will have a lot of stuff to talk about. And my own background, by the way, you know, Michael Fiore. People are like, "Oh, Michael, you're such a great guy, and you're, you know, teaching people about relationships." I learned this stuff too, by the way, about how to pick up girls back in the day. One of the reasons I think that our material is good is because I'm a real guy who, you know, like a lot of guys, I was a geeky guy who could not meet women, and then I learned these weird secrets of attraction, much like what Josh is going to talk about. And in my own self, I became louder and more of a dick in a weird way.
Yeah.
Or more confident, cockier, things like that. Women are always asking, where are the nice guys? And the unfortunate answer from a guy's point of view is, well, nice guys don't get laid.
Right.
Nice guys don't get laid. And they're really mad about it, by the way.
And that's a huge problem. You know,
So Josh, let's make you less modest. So you've been on television, which is pretty cool. Right?
Yeah.
You're in that club.
Yeah, Today Show and Current TV and all that stuff.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You were on the radio for some things.
Yes.
You talked about
Sirius XM radio. I had that channel for a long time. I had a show on that channel.
So Josh is not just some random guy, and he's not what I would never refer to Josh as a pickup artist. I'm going to do interviews with pickup artists later. Josh is more just like a guy who was intensely interested in relationships, intensely interested in women, like all guys. Like, we want women. We like women to be attracted to us. It's a big deal. Mm-hmm. It's like how we spend 99% of our time is figuring out how do I make girls like me. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We will kill for such a thing. And just somebody who I think has a lot of empathy and a lot of perspective. So Josh, let's start off with the Secret Survey program and your perspective on it. Because, you know, some guys, they say to me, "Michael, I can't believe you're saying this stuff." I personally find a lot of the material pitched at women around relationships and stuff to be very patronizing to women. Right? Mm-hmm. And very much like, you know, I was reading something the other day where somebody said, a guy wrote an article, talking about what he first notices about a girl, right? And the article was like, you know, her looks are kind of important, but what I really notice is her smile and her, and I'm like, bullshit, right? And so my goal with this program was to be really, really honest. And having gone through it yourself, what are your thoughts on the Secret Survey program? Should women have taken this seriously? Where would you go with it?
I mean, I'm kind of torn in two different directions here,
okay,
Michael, because when you handed it to me and I started reading it, I was immediately like, dude, please don't. Releases. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I don't want to be mean about it, but I'm just like, it's just almost like this unspoken, you know, I don't know. It's like a code.
The bro code, right?
It,
the bro,
you know?
Code.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, and we just kind of don't let people know this stuff. And so I, on one hand, you know, I was like, the dude part of me was like, oh man, please no, like keep this out. At least don't put this in, you know, like I want to come back to you and be like, these are my edits. You know,
yeah.
But the psychology part of me, like the part of me that's really interested in women and really is interested in psychology in general, and the part of me that is constantly craving truth is just like, look, this is going to be painful, but it has to happen. Like, people need to know this, you know. So I found that for me, when I was reading through it, there was a lot of parts where I was, you know, I had to go, okay, once you release this, there's no taking this information back, you know. And people know it. And I know it's kind of crazy. It sounds like maybe some kind of, like, maybe you can imagine a bunch of guys getting together, being like, you know, secret meetings, like the Illuminati or something. And they're waiting in this small room. And they're like, okay, so should we tell women that we think this? No? Okay, well, we'll keep that secret for another 100 years. You know, like, it almost seems like that is the case. But, you know.
But it really is. Like, but it really is like the unspoken code, right? Like all of this stuff.
Yeah.
The stuff talking about why men lie around emotions and such like that. The stuff about cheating. Right?
Yep.
The simple fact, and this is so devastating, and I've had guys, too, get angry about me saying this, but every guy I've ever talked to says, yeah, in the right circumstances, if I wouldn't get in trouble for it, I would cheat on my wife.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Every single one, right? And it's like, and we don't say that, generally speaking, because it's going to hurt women, they're going to get really angry about it. The stuff about how men react to women every single day, what it's like to be a guy sexually when you have all this testosterone thrumming through your veins. right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why don't we talk about that with women? Why do you think it is that, like, there isn't any other material out there that's like this program where it just says, here's the actual truth?
Well, I think that the answer to that's pretty embarrassing.
Okay, great.
Like a lot of things probably are, but really the truth is that we're scared. I mean, yeah. I think that what happens is, for me, it's I've sort of faced this for a long time in my life in order to sort of get to where I am with what I do. So I'm a little bit different than most guys would be. Mm-hmm. Just take whatever I say and magnify it by 1,000. And that's probably.
And I'll say right now, like, Josh is, a lot of guys out there are not emotionally articulate, right? The reason that guys like Josh and I can even talk about this stuff and teach this stuff is because we are emotionally articulate, right? Mm-hmm. The vast majority of guys that most women meet aren't really aware of their emotions in any particular way. So Josh has kind of a mutant power here, which is what allows him to share this stuff. But go ahead.
Yeah, you and I both kind of worked on this over time and tapped into it, you know?
Yeah.
And so really, I guess that the reason why I've noticed that a lot of guys are kind of keeping this sort of bro code hidden, mm-hmm. and these things that you revealed in Secret Survey, the reason why we kind of pull back and we don't want people to know is literally because if we have a woman that we really adore a lot, we think that if she finds out how we really feel, she's going to leave us.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so...
Or
and
I would even say if she finds out what we really are, she's going to leave us.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's two different varying levels.
Yeah.
For me, I'm tapped into what I feel. It's a little bit different, right? But for most people, and I think you're totally right. It's there's no buffer between what I feel and who I am for most people, especially for most guys.
Yeah.
It's just like that's what I am. I'm angry. I'm not feeling angry. I am angry. Right?
Yeah. That's interesting language. Interesting language hack there, right? It's like
yeah, totally.
Yeah. But go ahead.
So
yeah.
We associate so much with that we get so scared, and you know it's usually because, and if we break this down just pure psychology here, if we feel like we are valuable as men and you can't do better as a woman, like you cannot meet a guy who's better than me, if we feel that way, then we really have no problem exposing this to you.
True.
Because we feel like at the end of the day, you know, who cares? You'll find it out. If you hate me after that, like that would be silly of you to leave, and if you do like judge me for it, I'd be able to say, well, maybe this isn't good. Maybe you know, if you don't like me for who I am, maybe this isn't going to work out, or you know, or certain things I'm willing to give up or change, and certain things I'm not, because it's just who I am. But unfortunately, most guys don't feel that way, and this is where I come in, you know. And you too, Michael.
When I teach my male stuff, which I have an entire line of products for guys, but we've been focused on the women's stuff for the last year or so. Yeah,
right. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, you got to really hit it from both ends because there's confusion on both sides. And I've had, you know, I come into this and people buy my stuff and pay me a lot of money. And you know how much they pay me.
Yes, I do.
And they pay me so that I can make them confident so that they don't feel this way anymore. Because it's like I heard this comedian who's like talking a little bit. I forgot who it was now. But he was talking about why guys will just up and die out of nowhere of a heart attack.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And guys die younger than women, all that stuff.
Yeah, all the time.
You know, so he's talking about it. He's like, you know, it's like – we resent women because you can walk up to a puppy, you can go, oh my God, it's so cute. And we want to like pet that puppy and go out, talk about how cute it is, but we can't because someone in our mind that we grew up with, as soon as we reach our hand out, goes, fag. You know? You know? And we're like, ah. And it's just like, you know, 45 years of just pent up wanting to, you know, pet a fucking puppy.
Yeah.
And then but we can't do it. You know, we just have so much repression.
I mean, this is something I call, this is like a concept I call the, let's transition to this really briefly here. It's a concept I call the experience of being male, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is a fancy name for just like being a guy. And I think, and again, ladies who are listening, I'm not saying there's not the experience of being female too. And I'm not saying men should not learn to understand women better. They should. But that's not what this program is, right? But the experience of just being a guy, I'm a 210-pound hairy yeti of a guy, right? I've got more testosterone seeping through my pores than, you know, entire countries. And it's like a disease. To a certain degree, there are times in my past. I talk about this in the program, I believe. When I was with my ex-girlfriend years ago, who I was desperately in love with, and the fact that I have a lot of testosterone and have a high sex drive killed our relationship. Or maybe the fact that she had no sex drive killed our relationship. right? Mm-hmm. And I remember like being ashamed of my sexuality and being ashamed of my desires and being ashamed of just being a guy, right? Mm-hmm. Because we don't have control over it. It's a chemical thing, right? When you're a guy and you've got testosterone thrumming through your veins, do you look at other women? Hell yes, you do. You can't help yourself. You don't just look at other women. Mm-hmm. You want to walk over there and grab a girl you don't even know and ravage her and have her love it, right? Mm-hmm. You just want to do that. And I think for most women, they just don't understand what it's like to have those kind of desires going all the time, right? Mm-hmm. Why is sex so important to you? Why isn't sex more important to you?
Right.
That kind of thing.
I think that the kind of key here is, mm-hmm. is also in how women kind of look at attraction in a way that a man looks at sex.
Ooh,
and sexual
very
interest.
Interesting. Very yeah. interesting. Continue. Yeah.
You know, women will look at a man and be attracted to him and be like, oh yeah, I'm attracted to him. I'm imagining like flirting with him.
Yeah.
Right. And imagine him coming up to me and talking to me. And this is totally innocent, right?
Yeah.
But if you told your man you were doing that you were thinking about this other guy flirting with you, he'd freak out.
Oh,
right?
Yes.
So you don't tell him that, right? Mm-hmm. So, but there's absolutely no harm in you thinking that because you're not investing in it. You don't want to do it. You're not going to do it. It's just kind of like a little quick fantasy, right?
Yes, indeed.
Where you're imagining him kind of, you know, being curious about you and chasing you and all the little fun games you play. Well, men are the exact same way, but about sex. Like, we look at that and we just go, oh, well, you know, I'm not actually going to sleep with her.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I was thinking about it.
And you'll even fantasize about it, right?
Right.
And it's not like, one of the reasons I love my girlfriend so much, there's many reasons. She's stupendously hot. She's really fun. She's got an amazing ass. There's so many reasons. Mm-hmm. I just adore her. But she doesn't freak out, right? Like, I can talk about, very plainly talk about my desires and very plainly, mm-hmm. like, you know, say, yeah, I think that girl's attractive and in the right circumstances. And if I wasn't in a committed relationship, sure. Right.
Right.
And she's like, yeah, I get it. It's cool. Right.
Right.
As opposed to having it be this kind of big problem, but continue. I really want you to continue on that angle of the idea of like the feminine mm-hmm. and masculine attraction levels and how that kind of works.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, for guys, for me, one of the biggest things that I've taught mm-hmm. that I have to teach guys, one of the first things I have to teach them is that women, yes, they think differently, but how differently? What specifically is different about a man, the way a man thinks and the way a woman thinks? Mm-hmm. And if you look at the way men and women interact with each other, you can see pretty clearly what the difference is. One is that there's a major gender role issue, a gender role difference.
Okay.
And in relationships, your relationships will end tragically every time if you don't monitor your gender role.
Okay.
So there's a really big reason why.
Now, what do you mean by that? What do you mean by that? What is a gender role? What does that actually mean in this case?
Okay, so your gender role is really, at the end of the day, you don't have to buy into any gender role. We used to live in a world where it was survival of the fittest, right? Mm-hmm. Biggest, strongest man survived. The woman with the widest hips birthed the most children, you know?
Yep, yep.
And it was just, that's just how it was, you know? Yes. And she would go find a mate and that was the end. But then something entered into our world that changed everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that is society,
mm.
right? So it's not survival of the fittest anymore. It's not survival of the socially fittest.
Yes.
You know, so
what you mean though is it's not survival of the physically fittest anymore, right?
Exactly. Not
like
at all.
Being a, you know, being 7 feet tall does not really give you, I mean, it gives you some social advantage because people like tall people, but it doesn't give you the same advantage it used to, right? And being stupendously hot as a woman, yes, it's still an advantage, but it's not the same thing as it used to be. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and even so stupendously hot now, it's like sometimes it's anorexic, like thin women who end up being these idolized women. That isn't how it used to be, you know,
yeah, I know.
That doesn't make any sense at all. You know,
give me some Marilyn Monroe. I'm much happier personally, but
Well, a lot of guys who kind of come to terms and are confident do feel that way, you know?
Yes.
So basically what happens here is that we have a really big, 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 big problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that is you can survive playing any gender role you want. Now, this is a problem. It's a problem because we have a choice, and we've never had a choice before. You know, when the women's equal rights movement came out, and men were hearing, we're like dogs, you know, when you talk about that.
Men are like dogs, and you're a bad owner. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we hear something, we're like, we crap in the carpet, you know, 20 minutes later, we are somewhere else laying in the sun, and you come home and you beat us because we crapped in the carpet. We have no idea why you're hitting us. We're like, don't lay in the sun anymore. That's what we're thinking.
Or you should, like, why are you upset? You should know why I'm upset. But I don't. I have no idea.
I should know, but I'm dumb, so I really don't know.
I don't get it.
So what happens here is women were like, look, we want equal rights. And men heard, fine, you want to play the man's role? Go ahead. Right. This is exactly what we heard. And that is the last thing that that women meant whenever they had the equal rights movement. Right. They meant equal, but still different.
Yep.
Right. Still woman. Right. And it took, I would say it took a good 30 years for guys to at least start noticing and being like, oh, wait, this is kind of weird. Something weird's going on here. Right.
Yep.
So now we are children of this confusion. You know, we come into the world.
It's like when I talk sometimes about how feminism has created some problems. Right.
Yeah.
And this is not like I think women should have equal rights. I think a woman should be president. I think women can be. I've had bosses who are women, all totally cool. But the problem is, I have a lot of male friends who, especially when I was in my 20s, guys who were kind of like emotionally hip were like, well, how do I hit on a girl? Like, I have a friend who, another friend of mine used to date, and it's like, yeah, he was raised by feminists, and he does things like saying, is it okay if I touch your breast? Right. And it just like turns women off like crazy, and he doesn't get it because he's like, well, I'm being a good guy. It kind of goes from there.
It should be working, right?
It should be. I'm logically doing what I'm supposed to do, right? But it's like, well, it's not appealing to the deep levels of who a woman is or who a man is.
Right. And the reason why this is such a big problem now is because we are faced, like I said before, we're faced with the decision to make. We have to choose our gender role.
Yes.
Right. And a lot of women are still kind of playing the male gender role as a default. And whatever your default is, you will always attract.
So why are women playing the male gender role at this point? This was different before then, is what you're saying. Once upon a time, societally, there was the masculine and the feminine. And if you had a penis, you were going to play the masculine. And if you had a vagina, you were going to play the feminine. Right.
Exactly. If you didn't, you died.
And if you didn't, you died, or you were ostracized even. But now we're in in this post-feminist kind of world, right?
Mm-hmm.
You get to choose if you want to be
liberating.
It is much more liberating, and I prefer it, right? One of the things I talk about is occasionally people will post on Facebook or whatnot saying, wow, things were so much better back in the 50s. And I'm like, you are on crack, right? Back in the 50s, men knew how to treat women. I'm like, you mean beat them and cheat on them willy-nilly with no repercussions whatsoever? Because that's what they were doing. They didn't talk about it, right?
Yeah.
But now we're in this, 2012, as we're recording. Is it 2012? Yeah, as we're recording this. Sorry, I forget what year it is. And there's that whole option of choosing your gender role. So you're saying there's the masculine gender role, there's the feminine gender role. The masculine would tend to be the provider and to be the alpha, as it were. The feminine would be more of a, would be more of a caretaking gender role, more emotionally open, less aggressive. But now, whether you got a penis or a vagina, in our society, to a large degree, you can kind of choose it. And you're saying that a lot of women are inhabiting the masculine.
Yeah, and they're not making a choice, to be honest. They're just kind of doing it out of default because – you know, there are a lot of ways in which playing a masculine gender role is really beneficial. Like you're in the work environment, fired steel.
Yep.
I mean, you're talking about a masculine world. And so when you get into that corporate space, it's been built by men, the culture is still there. You have to adapt a bit of a masculine gender role in order to survive there.
Mm-hmm.
So what women do in an effort to stay consistent, which is completely honorable, I think, they do this all the time. Right? They end up playing the male gender role all the time. And so one of the biggest decisions a woman can make is to stop playing the male gender role unless absolutely necessary. Right? So let's say that you have a kid and your kid is wandering around and, you're a single mom and your child walks up, say it's a little girl, she walks up to a stranger and this stranger tries to pick her up.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? So you don't know this stranger, he tries to pick up your baby, he doesn't know that you're standing over there, right?
Yep.
You don't have someone playing the masculine gender role who's going to walk over. And even if you did, if he didn't walk over, let's say you had a husband and or someone was with you and they didn't walk over and go, what the hell are you doing? Put that kid down, right? And be that protector. It's okay for you to play the male gender role then, right? You're self-sufficient. You're allowed to do that. But the problem
And what would the action be in that? Just to make sure this makes sense. In that case, the male gender role is get the hell away from my kid. I'm going to punch you in the nose and kill you, right? Like, what's the basically? But you're like that aggression aspect, which is traditionally male at that point,
right? Exactly. Okay. And a woman would actually do the same thing.
Yes, very much so.
She'd be like, step away, blah blah, right? And then that's that sort of motherly get away from my babies kind of protection, you know?
Yep.
So the problem, the only problem, that's perfect, right? That makes sense. The only problem is it's safer to do that all the time, right? Safer physically to constantly be playing the male gender role. And so whenever a woman is in a situation where she doesn't feel like she has someone there who's playing the male gender role, she ends up doing that by default, out of a desire safety. And so what happens next is that men see her, and we subconsciously are reading which role she's trying, you're trying to play as a woman, and then we are going to try to put ourselves in the opposite. So there's some kind of like a missing piece of the puzzle we can fit into. Because at the end of the day, you know, being a feminist, being whatever, no matter what it is, we're looking at you as women, and we're going, how are we going to get laid in this situation? You know what I mean? Like, how am I going to?
Which is all men's dominant desire at the beginning, right? Yeah. Like, unless a guy's asexual, that happens occasionally, right? Mm-hmm. But the vast majority of guys, the dominant desire is, I want to have sex with this woman. And I want to have sex, to some degree, unconsciously, I want to have sex with a lot of women.
Really. Mm-hmm. Right.
And kind of go from there. Okay, continue.
Right. So the big question then becomes, you know, have you made a decision for your gender role, really, as a woman? You know, whenever you and I had to make this decision for ourselves, Michael, we kind of had to go through, I'm assuming you went through a similar thing, because you and I are a lot alike in a lot of ways here in this, that I had to actually sit there and go, all right, well, I am officially no longer a pussy.
Yeah.
It's just not happening anymore, right? If anything else comes up, I'm just not going to be a pussy. It's not going to happen. So I have to be a man, period, all the time, right? Mm-hmm. And this sort of, I think a lot of guys go through this process, and it breeds a lot of negative stuff, like like, now I can't be emotional, right? Whatever my impression of a man is, which we don't have any good role models. Let's just face it, we don't. You know,
we don't have role models of good guys. You know, like solid, emotionally open but aggressive and dominant guys, right?
Right.
And I actually just to talk about it from my own story to a certain degree. I share this stuff sometimes. I was a very emotional and feminine kid. Right. Mm-hmm. I'm still a very emotional person, but I kind of hide it behind snark most of the time, as you may have noticed in our hanging out at bars and things like that. But when I was a kid, I was that little boy who cried all the time. Right. Mm-hmm. Who everything that happened affected me emotionally. If I saw if I saw somebody bump their knee, I would say, ow. Right. Because it'd be like a high level, like an insane level of empathy. Basically. Mm-hmm. And that was a huge problem for me as a male child, because a lot of people would assume that, okay, you're like you said, you know, you freaking fag, what are you doing? Right.
Right. Something exactly.
You get a lot if you're a little boy who is emotionally hip, and that those quote unquote more feminine, more emotional things get beat out of you brutally. Right. So when women ask a lot of times, they say, Michael, why is he so emotionally closed off? Well, he's been abused for a very long time, right? He's been abused into that for a very long time. The only reason a guy like me, I've gone through, 8 years of therapy to get to the point that I could actually accept my emotions and not be ashamed of them, right? I don't know what you've gone through, but...
A decade
of just, and that, like I talked to my girlfriend about this, and I say, if you met me when I was 22, you wouldn't have liked me very much. I talk to the women who get my programs, and I say, if you met me when I was 26, you wouldn't have liked me very much, right?
Right.
Because it's like, it's all this, a lot of guys, they go through this experience of just like, anything they've got as a child, you know, some guys are just dicks naturally. They're just super alpha, super quote unquote masculine from the very beginning. And they play football and they just walk around and they're just douchebags and whatever. And it's fine. You know, and the rest of us pretend to be that.
No judgment or anything here.
No, but it's just like, we all learn how to do that. Like we all learn our swagger because we want to get laid.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like I can play that role very well if need be.
Right.
But so many of us guys, it's like, okay, we were born and we grow up and we're just like hit with these gender roles. And if you're a kid like me who wasn't very good at sports and didn't understand guys very well, I didn't personally have any male friends until I was in my late teens to 20s, basically.
Yeah.
It took me that long to get guys to a certain degree. it's really a very abusive life to go through. If you're a guy who's just like, well, I'm really emotional and I'm really, and I want to talk about this and I want to talk about this and I feel this and I feel this. But as a guy, culturally, that's not okay. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And that's a big, big confusion for us, you know? And so I think that, because of all these different factors that have sort of come into play over the last several years and really over the last several decades, we've gotten into a place of mass confusion, and it's necessary now for us to become clean with this stuff and to really kind of come out with it, because everyone's running around doing the wrong thing. It's making everyone upset, you know? Yeah. At the end of the day, women don't want to, on average. Now, there's some women that do honestly want to play the male gender role, and that's totally cool. And you'll end up with a guy who's very weak and submissive, and that will actually make you attracted to them.
Yeah, right? But I mean, like, what's like, the word weak is probably not the right thing to say there, as
yeah,
much
yeah,
as just, he's more...
I really mean emotionally weak.
He's more emotionally open and softer in a lot of ways, right? If
you
know, you're going to be the yang, he needs to be the yin, as it were.
Right. And in this case, you know, let's say that you are a woman who wants to play the female gender role, but you're just doing this, playing, you know, acting like a man, so to speak, in the meantime, then any guy you do attract that is, in your mind, weak, let's say, is going to seem like actually weak. Like, it's going to seem like that, right? I'm speaking from a guy's perspective, like, you know, from one guy to looking at another guy, I'd be like, okay, well, that guy's weak, right?
Yeah.
And that's really what it looks like to a woman who doesn't want that kind of guy. So if you're the kind of woman that for some reason you keep attracting like these submissive, you know, limp-wristed guys, you know?
Why can't I find a real man? Is the question we get.
Exactly. I mean, that's, I'm telling you the reason why right now.
Yeah.
And that's the reason
it's
why.
Because you're putting out this dominant kind of thing. Now some women, there's two quick things I want to say here. One is, I've talked about this before, and I'm sure I'll talk about it again. The weirdest experience of my life was a few months ago. I was at a conference, and I got hit on by a woman, which is not that weird. I do get hit on by women occasionally. This woman hit on me like I was a girl, right? she was a lesbian, okay? It was a woman I met, a lesbian who obviously was not 100% a lesbian and liked guys sometimes. And she tried to pick me up the way a guy would try to pick up a girl. So she actually did some like pickup artist stuff on me, basically. She would like neg me a little bit in that kind of joking way. She would like grab my hand kind of and do these things. And it was the weirdest experience and the most nauseating experience of my life. Right.
It's going to be a little emasculating.
You know? It was just weird. I'm like, I'm a big dominant guy, right? Like I'm a 210 pound bald guy and I'm pretty cocky and I do my stuff. And it was the weirdest feeling. I actually stopped her like, what are you doing? She's like, well, I'm kind of hitting on you. I'm like, yeah, you don't do it that way. Like that doesn't work on the guys. Like that's not going to work. And I know it's like some women are going to say, Josh, well, if I choose the feminine, does that mean I have to be weak and submissive and a 1950s housewife? Like, isn't that setting back everything we've worked for the last 200 years of women's rights? To be like, I'm going to accept this feminine gender role, this quote-unquote tradition. And I know, like, before I started studying this stuff, like, I fell for the men and women are equal and the same thing for a while. And it made me really bad with girls because I'd meet girls and I'd be like, you know, treating them like the exact same as we are, and it would never work. But I know, like, for women, it's like, I can feel someone being like, well, that doesn't make me feel good to be like, I have to put on a dress and you know, get barefoot and pregnant and go in the kitchen and bake cookies? So how does a woman like accept her feminine gender role and still be empowered?
Right. So I think that the answer to that question kind of lies in a really strange place.
Okay.
And that is in the apron.
The apron. Okay, great. Cool.
So, right. So we'll look back on the apron and we'll look back in the 50s. Mm-hmm. In the 50s, the apron was kind of a symbol of your inferiority as a woman.
Yeah, very much so. Yes.
It didn't seem like that on the surface because you were getting advertised with women happily wearing these aprons in the kitchen, you know, and doing whatever. But as sort of reality dawned on everyone and not everybody had to leave it to Beaver lifestyle.
Yes.
Well, you know, where the husband came home and was happy.
Let's be honest here. Nobody had to leave it to Beaver lifestyle.
Not even leave it to Beaver.
This is the thing of mine. The past doesn't really exist. The past we think existed didn't really exist.
Right. And it
there were no good old days, by the way.
Right. Yeah. Right. It was very propaganda driven.
Very much so. Very much so. If we keep saying things are great, they'll be great. Right.
Right. And that worked for a while because no one paid attention to anything except the war.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
And that made sense back then, you know?
Yeah.
So the apron now is kind of turned into a symbol of a woman's freedom and desire to be in the kitchen. It's completely different, but it's the exact same thing now, right? Mm-hmm. So whereas before you would have woken up in the morning, saw that thing, and you're like glare at it. You know, this is your fault. You know, you told me, you know, you were supposed to be the thing that's supposed to make me happy. You're supposed to, you know, get me respect for my husband. You're supposed to make everything okay. And I'm supposed to feel value in my relationship because of you. And it wasn't like that back then. And now it's really a sort of celebration of that. Just kind of like, you know, any kind of culture where people make fun of a culture, usually that word or association becomes part of that culture in a good way, right? Mm-hmm. You can take the power away from it by using it and accepting it. So you can kind of see the change now in the way that we view women specifically, view these sort of duties of not duties, but really her desires now instead of duties. Mm-hmm. They used to be duties, now they're desires, right? So let's look at submission as a duty and submission versus a desire. Be submissive.
Okay, great. Continue. Right? Yeah.
And that's really the big difference
and
here.
And that word submission has so much BS around it, right? Like we're not saying that in a negative way. We're not saying it in like a BDSM way either, right? Necessarily.
Well, I mean, we can't even go there.
We can go there, but it's not like that's not necessarily. We're not necessarily saying it's all about being tied up and whipped and things like that. But continue. Yeah.
Right. Well, I think that if you, I mean, let's this is a really visceral place to come from. So this is like where you have to really be honest. Mm-hmm. So let's look at it this way: if you are the kind of woman who likes to have not like, I'm not saying crazy dominance, you know, not to be dominated like crazy in the bedroom, but just at least a little bit, right? To have something to fight against, so to speak.
He'll hold you down a little bit, pull your hair, spank you on the butt. Yeah, those kind of
things. That kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Then you like the idea of submission when done right.
Yes.
You know, you like that idea, but you trust your partner in the bedroom. And this is where it all comes into play. When you trust somebody to play the male gender role properly, you will happily play what you believe is a submissive female gender role because it feels good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's all about having a man who you can trust that will do this for you. And part of that is not training him to be afraid of you.
Well, you know? let's I talk about this in the program. Most men are petrified of the women in their lives.
Yes,
right?
This is true.
Even me, to a certain degree. I found myself, like recently, I'm not going to go into details, but there was just some stuff in my relationship, and I found myself doing things I preach against, right? Like not bringing certain things up, because I was like, oh, it's going to make her upset. And I had to and I was like, I know my girlfriend can handle this stuff. She's really, really emotionally hip, and I found myself just getting scared of her to a certain degree.
Well, imagine if you didn't say that. If you couldn't say, I know my girlfriend can handle this stuff.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Because a lot of women, some women have been known to overreact in the past, maybe.
A few. Either way, you know, I mean, Michael, you are without a doubt, man, anyone who's listening to this knows that you have a lot of knowledge around this. And you're considered by very many women around the world to be a catch. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
A whole lot about this is that you're just a powerful man, right?
I do occasionally get marriage proposals over email. It's true. Yes.
I'm not talking about from me. Like you can leave my personal life with you out.
Yes, Josh. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So you're a very desirable man, and the most desirable qualities that you have lie in this. You know, your really tendency to be a no BS kind of guy.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And yet still. We have, and I'm talking to you now about this, you actually still have that thought cross your mind because every once in a while, it's scary,
mm-hmm.
you know? It is scary. It's a risk, you know? And so if you are having a hard time with this, you know, like every once in a while when it pops up, imagine a normal dude.
Yeah.
You know?
And having been a normal dude in the past, and I would actually say a subnormal dude emotionally in the past.
Yeah, me too.
I know what it's like to just be angry and rageful and ashamed all the time.
Right.
Like that.
So it's really difficult to come to any kind of terms like this unless you have a lot of sort of, let's call it altitude, right? A lot of a lot of a bird's eye view of what's going on, where you're not really affected as much. And women are drastically, sort of exposed to this fear that they're not going to find a guy like this, right? Filtering, just you know, relentlessly filtering out men that they believe are weak, or, you know, let's say weak men, right? Mm-hmm. Or that they believe aren't going to be able to stand up to them, tell them the truth, you know. Even whenever they when they're scared, they still tell them the truth. Well, the hard part about this, and the absolute truth of this, and this is not going to be easy to swallow, mm-hmm. but that's okay, because that's what you're going with here.
That's what we do. That's what we do. We tell the truth even when it hurts. Yeah.
Yeah. And the truth is that perfect men are not found. You're not going to find one. You're going to have to find somebody that you love and then put effort in to help them step into this purely powerful masculine.
And you have to give them permission, is something I talk about, especially in my texting programs.
Oh, I thought you were going to say blowjobs.
Blowjobs are great, too. And actually,
absolutely true.
Giving a man, bluntly spoken, just give him a blowjob sometimes and your relationship will be better. I know it. But he doesn't deserve it. Yeah, I don't care. You know, do it anyway. It's kind of like telling a guy, you know, give her a massage and warm up her car and buy her flowers sometimes. But I don't feel like it. I don't care. Just do it.
Yeah.
There's a big concept that I talk about in some of my stuff, which is permission to be what you are.
Right.
Permission to be a guy. Permission to be a woman. And to be.
It's not going to be easy either.
No, you know, it's to never give that. Easy to never to just like be like. My girlfriend and I have this issue where she's like, well, you know, you're kind of a slob and you're kind of loud and, you know, you fill up a room in a lot of ways. And she's a much more, she's not a performer the way I am, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, but at a certain point, you just got to be like, you know what? That's who you are. And you got to give, like, when you open the door where you say to a guy, and I talk about this in the sex section too, one of the most powerful things a woman can do sexually for a guy is be coy and submissive and give him permission to ravage her, right? Because a lot of guys sexually live they're really dissatisfied in their sex lives, right? Even if they're having a lot of sex with the same woman, they're dissatisfied in their sex lives because they're not able to really express what they really want, which is much as any woman who's read the Secret Survey results is pretty dark and dirty, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of going from there.
Yeah.
But if you can give him permission sometimes to just be like, just be a guy, be a beast. And if he can give you permission sometimes to be a woman, and sometimes being a woman just means wanting to be held down and taken, or wanting to be taken care of, or not having to be the guy in the relationship, right?
Right.
Not having to make all these decisions all the times. Falling into those quote-unquote more traditional gender roles.
Yeah.
Is very comfortable when it's done right.
Yeah, and I think that kind of reminds me of something that I think is worth mentioning here, and that is that when I sort of went through and started studying and researching why most relationships, long-term relationships, fail, it's because of one very simple concept revolving around gender roles, and it's really, really fascinating that this happens. Women have a way of – this has been the way that women have done things forever, and that is they've subconsciously – not consciously doing this, but subconsciously they are testing men. Instead of asking, right, they just go, let me just do this and see what he does, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not malicious, nothing like that. It's not like – I don't want to make it sound like it's something that women are doing premeditated or anything like that. It's nothing like that.
It's totally I believe it's usually totally unconscious.
I do too. And part of the reason why I believe that is because it is so well put together. I don't know anybody, you know, male, female, or otherwise genius that would be able to put it together like this, just consciously. It would be close to impossible, right? So here's what happens. Again, we're like dogs. We don't know, you know? So women will test.
We're not lying about not knowing, by the way.
No, we're not lying about that. That's absolutely true.
We just don't know. We don't get it.
I know it's convenient.
Yes.
Like, I know that's very convenient for us to be able to say that.
Yes.
But it's the absolute truth.
It's the actual truth. We just don't. We have no idea what the hell you're talking about.
We're like, you think you're being really obvious, and it's the most subtle thing in the world to us. I mean, you got to remember that, you know, if you listen to a masculine sounding song, it is 10 decibels louder than any song that sounds feminine. It's just how it is, you know. Everything in our lives are turned up louder,
and we're single and we're single taskers, right? We're just like, we're focusing on one thing at a time. We don't multitask, and it's like aliens, right? It's like, we can't get you because we are fundamentally different creatures.
You know, so what I found is that what was really shocking to me is that because women will test to see whether or not you're going to be playing the male gender role properly, mm-hmm. They'll test by trying to play the male gender role. And this has like been the go-to test for women for decades, for probably since the beginning of time, really, since mm-hmm. the beginning of society, mm-hmm. is that they'll try to do it. They'll entice a man to go, no, I want to do that. And whenever he steps up and goes, no, I'm doing this, then they're like, mm-hmm. oh, great, right? So this has become a problem now.
Oh,
because,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because we don't recognize that's a test anymore, right? We don't see
because men and women are equal, right? So you're just like, well,
right.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
And for guys, it's like, well, you said you wanted to go to this restaurant. Well, I wanted you to suggest something else. Like, but,
right.
What?
Right. So this is the constant yeah. conversation, yeah. right? This is like the biggest.
Yeah.
There was this one like short comic online, and it was like, when I get a restaurant, I'm going to name it. I don't know, where do you want to go? That way I can always go to that place that my wife's always talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And like, and that's like what they always go. I don't know. What about you? What do you think?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't want to go there. You know? So the problem is that eventually as men, just as a whole, we get to the place where we stop recognizing that you're testing and we don't have the effort anymore to put into it for whatever reason, right? We're lazy. We don't see it. Probably because we're lazy, to be honest.
Well, we just don't. We've done it so many times before.
Right, that's what I mean. We're burnt yeah. out on it. We just
like, really?
Think that you should
do
believe
this again.
Now.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Mm-hmm. Well, fine. You can do it. Let's see how happy you are. Right?
This ties into the emotional castration concept, by the way.
Yeah.
The concept of emotional castration that I talk about in the product, the program, mm-hmm. where it's where men get denied so much, right? Where it's like right. a guy says, "I love you," and you say, "No, you don't," or "Prove it,"
right.
or "Do you not believe him?" Or, "Wow, you look beautiful." You have to say that. You're my husband. Right?
Right.
Which is all little mm-hmm. tests and all little things. And at a certain point, you're like, oh, come on. Really? I got to keep
right.
doing this? I got to do this again?
Yeah, it needs to stop at some point.
Yeah.
You know, and so what happens is women don't change their techniques on how to test.
Yep.
Because it's worked in the past. That makes sense, right?
Yeah, totally.
And men don't change their techniques on passing that test, mm-hmm. right? The only difference is that men go, oh, come on, you know, come on, stop doing this to me.
Yep.
And instead of saying it like that and being open and honest, and because we don't know what's going on in our heads, we just get a feeling like, I don't know, it's aggravating me. Stop.
Why am right? I pissed? Why am I pissed off? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Yes. I'm just mad. So leave me alone.
Why am
while.
I mad?
Right.
I don't know why I'm mad, but I'm mad. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what ends up happening is women go, well, fine, I will play this role, right? I will do this. I will make a lot of decisions, mm-hmm. and they start doing it, and then they get miserable
and resentful.
Right? And resentful. And then the guy's resentful and he gets into yes, dear mode. If you're in yes, dear mode in your relationship right now, you are literally 2 months from a divorce if you're married, or you're 2 months from being broken up with.
If you're a guy, yeah, very much so.
Yep.
Very much so.
That's just how it is.
And the women that force you into that position are the ones that really need you to step up. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and so really I think there needs to be a complete overhaul of these different techniques that we use to figure it out. In the beginning, testing is a great way to figure it out. Really, it's extremely accurate. I'm not going to lie to you. When you walk up to a guy and he's seeming really cocky, and you say something like, you know, why should I talk to you? You know, who are you? And you're done up, whatever, and he's trying to hit on you. And he passes through that. He's like, well, because I'm awesome.
Yeah.
Right? And he doesn't get all cheesed up. That is a really, really good, accurate test, mm-hmm. actually. That actually mm-hmm. works, right? And he's like, well, because I got something that you want. I'm amazing, right?
Yep.
I'm going to make you laugh, and we're going to have a good time.
Yep.
So that's what you want to hear, right? That works. But whenever you get into a relationship, all this stuff shifts. Instead, you're on the same team now.
Yeah.
You're not on different teams anymore.
Yeah.
And this is really scary for a lot of women. If you're not on the same team as your man, you're done. It's only a matter of time.
It's kind of like, and it's also like the techniques that men use on women. You know, sometimes women say, they'll get text the romance back, right? One of my other programs, mm-hmm. a really good program. I'm really proud of it. A lot of women mm-hmm. have gotten a lot out of it. And a lot of that program is about appreciation. And about showing mm-hmm. your man or your woman that you appreciate them and seducing them and doing the other things. And women will sometimes mm-hmm. write me and say, but he's supposed to chase me. Right? He's supposed to chase me.
Right.
And if I'm telling him what I like about him, he's not chasing me. I'm like, like Josh said, you're on the same team now. Right?
Yeah. Well, that's true for a while.
It's true for a while. And you can mix right. that in. You can play those games. Mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
But mm-hmm. the problem is, like, you know, guys are like, well, why, women are like, why isn't he interested in me anymore? Why doesn't yep. he seduce me the way he used to seduce me? And there's reasons for that. One of which is you're the same woman he's been with for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Sad, but true. Like, men actually do get bored And there's ways to deal with that, by the way, but it's a simple fact, right? It's just just there. Yes, men want variety. It's a fact. But it's like you can't use the same techniques that you're going to use when you meet somebody to maintain long-term love. At a certain point, you have to get more intelligent about it. And you move and you move away from the visceral into the emotional companionate kind of stuff and consciously reawaken the physical and the passion, right?
Right.
As opposed to just being like, well, it should just be there. And he should do this, and he should do this, and he should do this. Like, well, it doesn't really work that way anymore. Sorry.
Right, and I think that that's really, you know, that kind of plays into the idea that I was hitting on earlier, and I totally agree with you. And that is that good relationships aren't found. They're built from lesser parts, or from extra parts of lesser relationships, really. I mean, you go through, you find something you don't want, you go into the next relationship, you make sure that when that pops up, you say something about it, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of before, you didn't like that, right? So you just, it ruined your relationship, so you make sure it doesn't happen again. So you're going through collecting this information of what you do and don't like in a man, and that information is sort of leading you down to find your ideal man. Now, you can find an attractive man, for sure. They are found. They're everywhere, right? You can find those guys, and you may be asking yourself, well, where are they? You know, I'm looking around. I'm not seeing any, right? I'm not seeing any attractive men. But there are attractive men until you start talking to them. Then you enter into a new level, a new sort of phase of an interaction. And in each phase, the rules change. And if you don't know the rules for each phase, you will fail to push forward through that phase, you know? And the rules that you have in a relationship are very different than the rules that you have during the first time you connect with them, which is called the rapport phase, during the time when you're flirting, which is called the attraction phase, during the first time you become sexual, which is the seduction phase. So these are all very, very different personalities that come out in you and in him. And then after that, you have different levels of your relationship that goes deeper over time. And so you have to recognize, I call this seeing the matrix, right?
Okay.
You have to recognize
that
which
was a great
stage
movie. Great movie. Yeah. Too bad they never made any sequels to it, because it was such a great movie.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wait, no. Yeah. I wish they had never made sequels to it, because they were awful.
Yeah, that's what you meant to say.
Yes, exactly. Go ahead.
Whoa.
Whoa. Yeah.
Whoa. That's Neo. Kung
Fu. I know sex fu, as they say.
Yeah. I know hung fu.
I know relationship fu. That's what I do. Anyway, go ahead.
So the idea is that if you don't know the rules for each one of these different stages, then you try to play the same games you did when you first started, and that doesn't work.
Yeah,
you know,
and you get frustrated. And guys do the same thing, by the way. They're like, as a guy, I can tell you, you know, you're with a woman for a while, and you're like, well, it used to be that all I had to do was just like walk up and grab her hair, and we'd be having a good time. And now she's like, oh, I'm tired, and I have to do all this other work now. Like, what's going on? And you feel gypped. You feel like, oh, what the hell's kind of going from there?
Yeah, I didn't buy this. This isn't what I bought.
Yeah, I thought I was going to have just like, I thought I was going to be dating that. I thought I was marrying that, you know, sexy little nymphomaniac I first seduced back in college. Oh, wow, she's different now. Right? What's that old phrase?
Right.
Men assume women will never change. Women assume that men will. Right?
Right.
And it's like, oh, yeah, well, sorry. Yeah. Kind of, but I think that, I mean, the core message here really seems to be just like, to me, it's the concept of the conscious relationship, right?
Yes.
If you want it to
last. New level, you know.
And actually, they say, you know, women always ask me, how do I make it last forever? It doesn't. You don't, right? Mm-hmm. The relationship you had when you first got together is fleeting. And with very, very rare exceptions, there's like, you know, 1% of the population that somehow keeps that insane spark going for 50 years, but it's very, very small. And it's weird enough that scientists study it and try to figure out what the hell is going on, right? Mm-hmm. Where they're like, why are these people still in love? I don't get it. But you evolve, you change, you have to kind of be consciously in the relationship and realizing that things are going to be different, realizing that the person you're with is a human being. He's a man, he's getting older, he's changing, everything about in his brain is going to be different. And that relation between you is going to change. The only way to get to rewind things back to that spark is to do it very consciously, right? Mm-hmm. People always assume love is going to be easy. Love is hard. Love is work.
It's work.
It's work.
Yep.
Constantly.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's worth it, in my opinion. You know,
I think it is too. I mean, I love being in a as a guy who is listen. Yeah, yes. Did I personally enjoy my time sleeping with a lot of women and going off and doing that kind of thing? Yeah, it was fun, right? I really like being in a committed relationship with a wonderful mm-hmm. woman. But it's a challenge as a guy. You know, do I still have those desires to be like, man, it'd be kind of fun to just go off and pick up a girl tonight? Yeah. But you don't do it, right? You make a conscious choice not to kind of do it and kind of go from there. But it's work. It's difficult. It's always going to be difficult. I hate the myth of Prince Charming, the myth of happily ever after, right? Mm-hmm. It never exists. The couples that make it long term are the ones that understand that they are standing on a spinning log in the middle of a river.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, you can't go to sleep on your relationship.
No. And you got to come. I mean, for me, I personally, me and my girlfriend, I like every couple of months, I sit down with her and I say, what's good and what's bad, babe? Mm-hmm. Right? Just like very bluntly. What are your complaints? What's really bugging you right now? What's making you furious with me? And what's making you really happy with me? And we have a really good conversation about it. And we're
I do the same thing.
Yeah. And it's just like, because I know it's always funny because some women that see my stuff on Facebook, oh, you must be the perfect man to be with. I'm like, hell no.
Yeah, right? Ask my girlfriend about that.
Yeah, ask my girlfriend about it. She loves me. I love her. We have a great time, but I'm certainly not perfect. Right. And nobody's going to pretend perfect. Josh, let's, I think we could chat about this stuff all day long. I kind of love what you've been saying, but let's move on to the lie detection stuff. Yep. I think, you know, we got a relatively limited time left together. And I think this is really valuable material. And, you know, for women who are listening, you know, go back and re-listen to everything we just kind of said. It's a little disorganized there because we're just kind of having a relatively casual conversation. But a lot of what Josh is saying about the methods of attraction and what I was talking about with masculine shame, and especially his stuff about gender roles. You know, there is a certain point where you make a choice to be in that gender role and to give up a certain level of power and control. That's hard to do that unless you know the other person is taking things up. It's kind of like in my business. I have people with me who work with me, who I know I can trust to handle things. So I don't worry about it anymore. And I can just be who I am and do the stuff I do. But there's no shame. You're not like, you know, you're not like setting back feminism 50 years by, letting him choose where to go to dinner. Right.
Right.
Or,
and, you know, and even if you are like, even if you, that were the case, who cares if it makes you happy? You really can't care.
Or like getting him a beer every once in a while, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not saying you got to be the 50s housewife who's a submissive servant all the time, but it's like, I'm just getting you a beer because I felt like it. What's wrong with it? Just like, you know, and
because I love you, you know.
Yeah, same way he should just kind of go out and like warm up your car for you sometimes, right? Traditional gender roles, but hey, do it. It's okay. So let's move on to the lie detection stuff to a certain degree, because I think we'll spend 15, 20 minutes on that, because I think it's really fun stuff. And one of the most infuriating things for women is dealing with guys who are lying. And I personally, you know, I have that section, Why He Lies, where we talk about forgiving guys for lying to a certain degree, because oftentimes lies are white lies and aren't that big of a deal, right?
Yeah.
Oftentimes people are just lying to themselves, right? We're embiggening ourselves in some ways, and you can just kind of let that go. But there are douchebags out there, right? There are people there are guys who are manipulative, and there's a lot of guys who will tell you anything just to get in your pants, right?
Right.
So how does a woman, let's talk about the lie detection thing. What are some tips if a woman meets a man, or is even with a man, you know, romantically, for her to pick up on whether he's lying or not about the important stuff?
Okay, so I think first it's kind of important to note that, you know, you went over why men lie in your book a lot, you know, and it's really, really powerful. Probably one of my favorite sections of the entire thing. Mm-hmm. And I think I'd like to go over how in this one, right? So how men lie in this one. I think that it's important to note that before we get started in this, that you have, when you recognize that someone is lying, you have within your possession a weapon so powerful, you can bring anyone to their knees, right? And then you lose that power as soon as you reveal you know he's lying.
Very interesting. So it's the power. It's kind of like playing a board game to a certain degree, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like playing poker. I know your cards.
Right.
But you don't
know your cards, but if I say I know your cards, you're going to fold.
But you don't know that I know. You don't know that I know your cards, and you don't know that I have four aces. So
So this is, I might risk a little bit by using this analogy. I might risk you feeling like you are, you know,
go for it.
I don't want to risk you feeling like you're on the other team here, you know, against your significant other. So, but either way, you have a very, very important decision to make whenever you realize that someone is deceiving you that you're with. And, you know, in a minute, I'm going to tell you exactly how to do that. And before I do that, I want you to know that when you make that decision, here's what you're going to have to weigh. If you believe that whatever it is that this person is lying about is not hurting you or them, and they're coming from a positive place, I would leave it alone. And I would leave it alone, and I would just be like, okay. And you can know the truth. That's okay.
Yep.
You know, and you could talk about it later if you want to, right? When they're not going to start, you know, digging themselves a hole, right? Mm-hmm. Out of it. Because if you confront them about it, they may actually begin to lie about other things to sort of seem consistent. And this is where you can create a lie that's really terrible, where and there was not
create
a be
much
a lie.
More important lie.
Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah. And that can be the thing that ruins your relationship because you just wanted to push it because you didn't like being lied to, right?
And everybody lies.
Right? Yes, they do. Everybody does. And it's okay. It's okay that you're doing
one of the things I tell them to
okay
do
that,
is just you know, create a lie journal of all the lies you tell today to yourself.
Right. Yeah, you'll be astounded.
Mm-hmm. I don't care how honest you think you are. They're everywhere, right?
Yep.
They're everywhere.
For a while, when I was in Tallahassee, Florida, I was living there, I went through a stage where I was practicing something I didn't know really existed to anybody else, but I didn't know this was a concept already.
Radical honesty, yeah.
Found out later it was radical honesty, yeah. Yep. So I didn't know this. I was just studying Zen at the time, and part of Zen was being completely open, you know. And so I started trying to correct on my lies, and I realized that I lied about little things. About the first day I tried, it was probably about 50 to 60 times that I was in conversation.
Yep.
Not even to myself, but in conversation lying about something.
Yep.
And I started correcting myself in the middle of the conversation.
Yep.
And I had some really weird looks, you know. And people were like one part I was like, "Oh yeah, that girl, yeah, she came in and she talked to me and blah blah blah." And then I was realizing that I was fantasizing about that in my head as I was saying it. That wasn't really it didn't actually happen.
Yeah.
No. So then in the middle of my conversation I was like, "That didn't really happen. That was a lie."
Yep.
And my friend was like, "Okay, you know, all right, fine." So I went through and I sort of broke that down for myself. But keep in mind that whenever you do recognize a lie from someone, you may or may not want to bring it up. If it's an innocent lie that you think isn't going to hurt anybody at all, you don't need to bring it up. If it's something that's innocent that is going to hurt somebody, you definitely need to bring it up, right? So if it's hurting them or you or anyone else, but it's an innocent thing,
to a certain degree, you have to let some of the – we all have our illusions about ourselves.
Yes.
Right? We all have the story we tell the world about ourselves, and it's not necessarily true, but sometimes it's useful.
Right? Well, if it's useful and it helps you, then it's not hurting you, right? If it's going to hurt you, then it needs to be brought up, right? I kind of looked at my duty as a man like this. Like my duty as a man is to – let's say that a woman is like a butterfly, right? Or like let's say that a woman is like a girl chasing a butterfly. Let's just look at that, right? She's looking at the beautiful things in the world and she's recognizing them. My job as a man is to move everything out of her way so she doesn't trip on rocks as she's like following her dreams and expressing. Now, if she tries to chase this butterfly off of a cliff, I'm going to stop her.
Yeah.
Because it'll hurt her, right? Or if she tries to chase this butterfly, you know, into me, I'm going to, you know, correct her a little bit so that way she's not running into me and hurting me, right?
Yeah.
But besides that, as long as she's not hurting herself or me or, you know, anything like that, then it's completely fine. I think she can feel whatever she wants to. Mm-hmm. It's just that we have to be able to recognize when someone's hurting themselves with a lie or hurting you with a lie. And so if you see that at any point, feel free to reveal that this is a lie. And I'll tell you how to do that in just a minute. But if that's not the case, especially if you think that it is not an innocent lie, you think that it's malicious, then you don't want to tell them.
Yeah.
Because if you tell them that you know, they're going to try to backtrack, they're going to get angry, they're not going to slip up. What you want them to do is continue to lie. Mm. That's what you want them to do. And you want them to continue to lie and create such a story around it that they are flustered and having a really hard time keeping it all together, right? And what you do whenever you do this is you basically implant a negative association with this lie. So let's say it was like, where did you go last night? It's like, oh, I went down to to the bar and met so and so, right, for a drink. And you see a couple of triggers that I'm going to talk about in just a minute that let you recognize that that's a lie. Yep. Then you may go, oh, really? I've never been there before. Is it cool? Yeah, yeah. Oh, it was really cool. Oh, really? Was it packed or anything, or is it really busy? Or no? And ask questions that you seem completely innocent, right? and then just let him completely make up details, right? Don't let him know that you know he's lying.
But I also only do this if you think it's an important lie.
Yes. Right? If it's something that's not going to hurt anybody.
Why were you late last night? Oh, I stopped off at a beer at this place, blah, blah, blah. If you know the real reason he was late was because he was, I don't know, looking at porn
working,
in his office or working.
Or working really late, you told him not to.
Exactly. And he's just like, I don't want to be hassled, so I'm just going to make up this little white lie. Don't make it a big deal. It's not worth it. Right?
Right. You're basically going to train him to not want to basically to get better at lying instead of training him to really be open more.
And the way to be more open is to show that you are okay with the truth.
It takes a little while.
And also to be honest with him, by the way. Like, the more honest you are with somebody else, my girlfriend is brilliant at this, by the way. Mm-hmm. I remember one time we were sitting on our couch and she was like, I'm really concerned about the idea of living with you in the future because for these three reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And she just said that. There was no anger in her voice. There was nothing else. She just said it, and it established the tone of our relationship forevermore. We had a great conversation that led to us living together now based off of that, right? Because she was really honest, as opposed to doing that whole like thing that a lot of people do, both men and women, where they dance around things and they get resentful and they do. She just kind of said something. If you are more honest yourself, you will encourage the people to be honest with you.
Right.
Okay, but anyway,
right,
continue. Yeah.
So essentially what you'll be doing if you let someone dig a deeper hole is you're creating a shitload of anxiety for them, and they associate that anxiety with a lie, right? So then moving forward, they're going to want to avoid it altogether. They're not going to want to lie. And if they think that they're going to – every time they lie, you do this to them, then they will they'll get so much anxiety they'll stop lying to you because they can't handle it. We can't handle that. It's too much pressure. By the way,
women are much better at lying than men are, tangentially.
Much better in general, getting away with a lie.
Yeah,
totally.
especially when it comes to something like infidelity.
Yes.
There's been some great studies on that, by the way, about how women are just like incredibly good at not leaving clues and at lying about it, whereas guys are like just do stupid things. But continue. Yeah.
So speaking of stupid things, let's talk about the ways that guys slip up.
Great.
Right? So there's a couple of different types of lying. There's concealment, where you're actually trying to take someone and put them in a different direction, like point them into a different direction, right? That's where you say something that's absolutely not true, right? This is sort of trying to hide a way that you feel or something that's true. And then the other one is you're going to look for something called a leakage. Leakage, this is a concept by Paul Ekman. Paul Ekman is a guy who is brilliant, studied something called microexpressions. And
great stuff. I read his book. It's great. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a TV show made about him called Lie to Me. Yep. It's fantastic. If you want to watch a TV show, it's a good one.
You learn a lot about feet in that one. About like
you learn a lot about lying in general too.
Yes, but you learn a lot about like, how somebody's feet are positioned is a huge indicator of whether they're telling the truth or not. It's really interesting.
Right. Yeah. So let's talk about the biggest, most honest ways to tell a lie.
Great.
The first thing you got to know is that you want to look for clusters of these things. You can't just look for one. If you see like, let's say that a guy was like, how do I know she's into me? And I said, if she twirls your hair while you're talking to her, then she likes you, right? Mm-hmm. And so imagine you're talking to a guy and you start twirling your hair. I mean, do you want this guy really to think that you like him in that moment? You do that all the time for nervousness. There's a lot of other reasons, right? So you want to look for clusters instead of looking for one indicator, right? And they're almost just literal. So let's talk about a few of the biggest ones. Whenever we feel like we're being confronted and we're afraid of being found out, this is the biggest kind of lie, right? We're afraid someone's going to catch on to us. Mm-hmm. We'll do one of a few different types of lying, right? Let's talk about body language first. It's one of the easiest ways to tell. When you are being confronted by somebody that you feel is going to find out a truth that you're trying to conceal, you will almost universally visually put something in between your chest and that person.
Interesting. Almost a shield in a way, right? Basically,
a shield, and it's exactly what it is, right? Hmm. It's protecting what you believe is the most vulnerable part of your body, which is typically your diaphragm, not your heart, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like actually below your heart, it's your diaphragm. So when a guy crosses his arms, what is he covering? He's covering his diaphragm, right? It's covering that weak, vulnerable part of his stomach right there, and he's usually bowing up a little bit to kind of like intimidate during that process. Another thing that guys will do whenever they're afraid of being attacked and afraid of being found out is they will drop their head just slightly so that their chin is protecting their neck a little bit, Mm-hmm. Right? So this is like, it seems a little bit submissive, but it's more like a getting ready to pounce stance. Mm-hmm. Another thing that they'll do is they'll shift. This is a little bit harder to tell, but they'll subconsciously shift the weight to the balls of their feet instead of standing flat-footed. This is a fight or flight. It's preparing for a fight or flight response. It's involuntary. We can't help it, right? So if they're sitting down, though, a lot of guys will have two different kinds of major tells. Let's call these tells, right?
Okay.
Like in poker. They're going to give away the truth and give away the fact that they're lying and trying to conceal something. The first one is going to be shielding, right? Mm-hmm. And that's in any kind of way possible in front of the chest. Like, I can literally take a glass of water and I'll put it in front of us, in front of me. Right? So it's in between me and you. Or I'll have a scratch on my shoulder, and instead of reaching with the same arm to scratch my shoulder like I would normally do, I reach across my body and scratch my shoulder.
So you're creating a barrier between yourself and the other person.
And often, the funny thing is, often there is no itch, but you can't prove that, right? You can't say, you're not itching, right? You know, you can't do that.
I'm crawling inside your body and monitoring your nerves, and I know that you are not itching right now.
That's our fear, actually, is that is happening, you know? And so what we do is we literally put stuff in between, or we'll walk so that there's something in between us and you, you know? We try to divert ourselves away from you a little bit, especially our faces. So that's one way. Another thing we'll do as men is we'll overcompensate with confidence. And this is, whenever this happens, we begin to do things like show our palms to you for no reason, right? So I'm going to do this on my lap so you can kind of hear it a little bit, and get an impression of what I mean by it. So if I'm talking to you and every once in a while I'm sticking my hands up kind of like I'm holding something, right? Almost like I'm about to shrug my shoulders, right? And what'll happen is a guy will do something like this. He'll do that, and then he'll slap his hands down, right? So like, look, I don't know what you're talking about, right? Blah, 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 blah. Like, it seems frustrated, so he's trying to deter you. It's overcompensating, you know, and acting frustrated.
Hey, Josh.
So
I'm getting some static on the line here. Talk for a second.
Sure.
I think it's gone now. Okay, continue. Yeah.
Okay, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you much better now, yes.
Okay, great, perfect. So what a guy will do often is he'll begin to overcompensate, and that's one of the ways that he's overcompensating. We try to overcompensate by expressing an emotion that's easy to fake, something like anger. Mm. Anger is easy to fake, and even more importantly, smiling is easy to fake, right? But it's very difficult to smile and continue to have a conversation, right? So we're more likely to go into something, if we think that you know us well, we're more likely to get into a situation where you start to feel reactive too, so you lose your cool, and you are not able to tell that we're lying, right? So we'll try to get you nervous, and the way we might do that is we might be like, look, why are you always asking me these questions, right? But one thing that we will do that'll give us away is we'll start to shake our heads no when we're saying something and slap our hands down on whatever it is we have our hands on. If it's on a table, we'll slap it down the table a little bit, you know, and we usually show our palms right before we do that, you know. And sort of just kind of give you an idea of what showing your palms does. Showing your palms exposes your wrist. It says, I trust you. That's what it says. Mm-hmm. So what we're trying to say is, I trust you and you're making me angry, right? I trust you and you're making me angry over and over and over again. And when we're saying what we're lying about, we're shaking our heads no, because we literally don't believe what we're saying. Right, so these are all
interesting. Okay, great, great. So you're not looking for just like one cue. There's not any one cue. And I remember reading from reading Ekman's book, one of the mistakes that people make is they obsess about one cue, and they think, oh, he picked his nose, therefore he must actually be the murderer. And it's like, no. That's, people just do that sometimes, but these are all indicators. They're not proof. You have to use a combination of them. Don't become a lie hypochondriac, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lipochondriac.
That's a new. I'm gonna coin that one. And
So basically, what you'll be doing then is you'll be looking for these different series of motions that he's in. Another fantastic one is you want to look for the context under which he's doing this. One time I was on a date with someone before I had my beautiful girlfriend now that
she's pretty awesome and very cute. It's true. So,
yeah, she's amazing. I would chase her for 10 years. So I'm glad I finally
have
her.
And she kept running. That's amazing. But
yeah. she was, you know, it's hard.
She's honestly just way too good for you. So
yeah, that's probably what it is. You know, it's the cardiovascular thing.
I think it's
got good cardio.
That's why she's so skinny right there. But yeah.
And that's why she runs so well. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I was on a date and I had was sort of just diving into these different ideas of deception. And one of the things that I learned was that context is just as important as content, right? So if every time that I say something, you do a certain weird body language trigger, I not only know that you're trying to lie to me, I know exactly what you're trying to lie about. You know, and this is very, very, very powerful. So what you want to do is you want to pay attention and you want to try to dive into stuff a little bit to figure out what is the lie. Because maybe he did go to that bar last night, but maybe he didn't meet a friend, you know. And as you start to reveal this information and he starts to talk to you about other stuff, right? So how was James? You met with James? How was he? You know, and he starts doing weird stuff, then you know that he's lying about that, right? So you can narrow this down. If you find that it's malicious, it's oftentimes better to sort of research a little bit before you start talking about it, you know. Really do your research. Try to figure out if there's anything else, because as soon as you give any kind of a clue that you're on to him, guess what he's doing? Going through his cell phone, deleting text messages, going through his email, making sure there's nothing in there, cleaning up all of his tracks, you know, making sure that he finds a way to get in touch with her.
Maybe and also just getting angry, getting angry at you at the same time.
Yeah, well, that's just to scare you. As soon as he leaves.
But it's also projection. Yeah. I mean, oftentimes people will they'll internalize that emotion, right?
And
they'll be like you know, they'll blame you, and they'll get angry at you for all these kind of things. So you want to prevent that. You want to prevent that fight or flight reaction.
Exactly.
Because fighting sucks.
And so,
yeah.
Yeah, well, either one, fighting or flighting in this case.
Flighting away, yeah.
Being flighty. Mm-hmm. So the other thing I would say that was really important, of course, content and context is very important. Now, another major trigger that you want to look for is something called – it lies in something called IXS and Qs. So this can be really complicated. This is the FBI uses these a lot to interrogate, and a lot of other government organizations use these too. And essentially what we found out is that when you look in different directions, you access different parts of your brain. Mm-hmm. And if a guy is looking down, he's accessing his emotions. If he's looking up, he's accessing his visual brain. Now, you can test this if you want to. Not that it's impossible – to access your emotions when you're looking up. But if you try this out, try thinking back on a relationship that you had that went terrible, like the very end of the relationship and how it was all kind of going terrible. If you look up the whole time you're thinking about it and you recall step by step everything, you'll have one experience. Then if you look down and do the same thing that you just did a minute ago, you may start crying.
Interesting. And very interesting.
The reason why is because now your emotions are flowing, right? We have an association with this. So you can recognize if he's saying something he shouldn't be emotional about, but he's looking down, you know that he's emotional about it. Now, it could be that he doesn't want to feel weak, you know, or seem weak in that moment. So you can't necessarily be like, you're lying, and blah, blah, blah. You got to watch yourself.
Well, the opposite is also true. If you ask a man, how do you feel about me? And he looks up.
Oh yeah, he's probably not about to tell you the truth. He's probably trying to hide something really, really
or,
bad.
Or moreover, maybe he just doesn't know at that point, right?
And
he's trying to,
but he's not trying to figure out how he feels in that moment.
He's doing that thing the guys do. He's like, she's asking me this question. What's the right response?
Exactly. Yeah. Let me imagine something. So he's visualizing something literally.
What is the actual right response that will get this situation to end as quickly as possible?
Yeah. Right. And then the next bit here is going to be a little bit more helpful, right? Mm-hmm. When you look in to the left and to the right as well, like up and to the right versus up and to the left is different, right? Mm-hmm. So when you look to the left and the right, you access different parts of your brain as well. And this is between your recall memory and versus your creative brain and your creation of something, right? This is really important. Now, the hard part here is that people are different. I've heard people teach this one way or the other. It's not necessarily that if he looks right all the time, it's this way, right? It's not like that. You have to find a baseline. You have to notice where he looks when he's trying to recall something, right? And when you get that baseline, you can do that by asking things that you know he's not going to lie about and then that you know the answer to.
Which is much like when somebody's using a lie detector. You know, when a government employee or somebody like that is using a lie detector on somebody, they'll ask baseline questions for this exact same reason, where you're basically saying, you know, they're hooked up to it and you're saying, what is your name? Michael Fiore, and then that'll you know, give a positive response. Are you sitting in a chair right now? Yes. Are you flying right now? No, right? And they'll establish these kind of things. You can't do it quite as formally because you don't want them to know what you're doing.
Are you flying right now?
No, that's not even a lie as much as an it's not really, it's more like an incredulous kind of thing at that point.
Right.
But yes. Okay, so, continue.
Mm-hmm. So what you have to do is you have to base this. I found that generally speaking, in my experiences, that when someone looks to the left, it's more likely, it's probably 60% chance that they're accessing their creative brain. And this is just my experience. People have experienced other things as well. I would strongly suggest that you test it out, mm-hmm. because really you only need to know the man that you're dating. You don't need to know too many guys, right?
Yep.
So test that out a little bit and find out what that is. Anytime they look in that other direction, the creative brain side, you can bet your ass that they are not trying to, they're not recalling something. They're not remembering something. They're making something up, you know, and sometimes it's okay. Like if you said, you know, could you imagine being on a boat with me and just living on this boat? Okay, well, if he looks up on the left, he's not lying to you. He's just imagining that. He's never mm-hmm. had that experience before, so he's creating that experience. Mm-hmm. So you want to watch this. Anytime they access their creative brain when they should be accessing their recall, you know for sure. This is one of the most amazing tells ever. You know that they are lying to you in that particular instance. Now, you don't know why, and you don't know what about specifically yet. So then you have to do a little bit more digging. And the last thing I would like to sort of talk about that's a really good indicator is that we have something called forced blinking. This is another really
important.
Forced
blinking, okay.
Yeah. Forced blinking is the idea that whenever we say a sentence, we will blink on the word that makes that sentence a lie.
Wow.
And it's really,
really
okay.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Right. So we will – because blinking is something that we think that you cannot say that we're doing on purpose.
Yep.
Right. We know this. And it is a really sneaky attempt to subconsciously hide our eye accessing cues, right? So you don't know which direction I'm looking in. I don't want you to know.
Right? Okay.
So one way, and usually what we do is we'll enunciate the word and then we will literally blink during that moment. And it may be something as simple as, I did not go to the bar last night, right? So I did not, when I say not, I will blink. Right. Mm-hmm. And usually tilt my head to some direction, right? Left or right a little bit, and drop my neck a little bit, and, you know, usually want to curl my shoulders forward. Like, I'll get a little bit, like, defensive almost, but most guys, if they're lying to you directly, they'll know better than to put their arms across their chest and go, no, what are you talking about? You know, like that kind of thing. They know better. Really good guys are good at lying, know better than to do that. Mm-hmm. So instead, you want to look for something that's really involuntary, which is forced blinking, you know? And so another thing you can watch is that if a minute ago he was talking about something that is true and he's like looking in different directions, then all of a sudden you say something that's innocent and he locks eyes with you, gives you the answer, and he tries not to blink at all. His eyes get kind of wide. Then he's also trying to hold back any tells that he has to try to let you know that he's lying. So forced blinking is probably one of the most accurate, well, along with eye accessing cues in general, probably one of the most accurate what tells. If you get just one of those, I would say that's worth 3 or 4 of other body language cues, because it is so involuntary. We just mm-hmm. we don't really have any control over that. And we, you know, usually someone who has lied, if they think that you believe them, they'll smirk for like a split second. Just for a split second, they'll have a little glimmer of smile, and then they'll go back to being whatever they're supposed to be, right? But that's a little bit harder to see, because I think they just got away with a lie. That makes them feel really good. They go, oh, God, feels so much better now that you believe me, because, man, I was scared there for a minute. All the tension's gone, right? So, you know, where you may not be able to look at all these different cues consciously all the time and tell 100% of the time, I want you to be equipped with them in case you are in a situation where, you know, where it's like the day before he was thinking about cheating on you with a girl, and you can kind of get this out and know that something's terribly, terribly wrong, and you can stop it from happening. You know, and this is really what it's about. And of course, if you're in a relationship where, you know, your man isn't faithful to you and it's important to you that you are faithful, you know, that you guys have this sort of openness and you're able at that point to say, look, I know you're lying. I want to stop this now. I don't want to be done with this because I'm being deceived, right? You can stop it early and it won't be as much pain.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, fantastic. Great. Josh, I mean, we've covered a ton of stuff in our time here together. I think we should wind it down now.
Yep.
But thank you so much for sharing all this stuff and just having this conversation. I know women who have listened to interviews I've had with other guys in the past have always been like, wow, that's such great stuff, because I really get to know what it's like to be a guy and get that kind of information without all the BS that you get when you read Cosmo and things like that.
Yeah.
So I just want to really, really thank you for coming on board today.
Thank you, Michael.
And where can somebody find out more about you? Where can someone go? I mean, I know you don't have any programs aimed at women, though I think you should.
Well, I would work on that. You know, at some point I will, for sure. But I think that probably the most intriguing thing that, you know, I've had a lot of women do this, and they're really just fascinated by it. Try grabbing a copy of What I Teach Men. I mean, it is really interesting when you start to see the way I break it down. It'll reveal a couple of things that I teach men that men will be doing to you, right? Mm-hmm. So there'll be the tricks that men use on you.
Right? And like, well, tricks are such a negative connotation, right? Like,
right.
It's kind of like when I was a few years ago, when I learned something about hypnosis.
Right? Yep.
I got pretty good at it pretty quickly because I'm just that kind of person. And I would go out with female friends of mine, and I would say, hey, I learned something about hypnosis. And I would use that to seduce them while telling them exactly what I was doing. Right. Mm-hmm. And it was okay. We had a great time. Nobody was mad. Nobody was like, oh my God, you're manipulating me or something like that. These are games we play. These are things we do. But when you're aware of what's going on, you can make the choice to go along with the game or not.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, it isn't. I'm not saying that any guy who uses this is probably awesome.
He's probably a nice guy. Hopefully,
yeah.
Probably a nice guy
because he bought my product.
Who's actually just trying to meet high quality women,
right?
Because a lot of really nice guys are insanely frustrated because they're like, why do all the beautiful, smart, wonderful women go out with assholes?
Right, and I totally understand that sentiment. So, you know, if you do want to find out some of, let's say that they are like, you know, ethical. But sneaky, mm-hmm. right? Because they are, to be honest, they're ethical but sneaky. Techniques that are really advanced that guys will be using if they're not using them with you already, they will be in the future, and it's important to know that. Mm-hmm. If for only one reason, if you just want to know that a guy's actually interested in you because he's using these techniques with you while he's talking to you, then that's great. Or if you want to find out. Just to be prepared for when a guy does use it, so you can have sort of a leg up. Just grab a copy of it and see, and you know, see what you think, and check it out and learn as much as you can. That's probably the best thing for now, you know. So if I can, I'll give you a link or something, Michael, and you can put it below.
Yeah, we'll put it in the membership site for folks, so you can kind of get over there and take a look at Josh's stuff. It's really excellent stuff, by the way. One of the reasons I like Josh so much is because his heart is in the total right place. As far as these things go, he is, like myself, someone that just really likes and appreciates women and thinks women are awesome. And he teaches, hopefully, good guys how to go out there and meet women, as opposed to some of the other people who I may interview in the future, who are a little more manipulative about it. And we'll probably get into that later. I have one interview planned, which will be with a notorious pickup artist who has slept with hundreds of women and might even be a little mean about it. I don't know. We'll see.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. So, Josh, thank you so very, very much for coming on board. Ladies who are listening, I hope you appreciated this. And please, as always, please put comments down below and let us know what you thought of the interview with Joshua Pettisier from the Tao of Badass. And we'll have more great stuff for you in the future. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.